Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. I'm delighted to say that this podcast is sponsored by Peanut. Peanut is the app that helps you meet like-minded women who are trying to conceive, pregnant, or already mums. Peanut provides a safe space for women to build friendships, ask questions, and find support. Introducing you to women nearby who are at a similar stage in their journey, Peanut provides access to a community of women who are there to listen, share information, and offer valuable advice. Whether it's understanding IVF, PCOS, miscarriage, or pregnancy and beyond, Peanut is a place to connect with women who understand. I used to go to a weekly rhyme time class with Ren, and between the babies crying, the toddlers singing, and all the general noise and shenanigans, it could be really hard to stop and chat to some of the other mums. So when one of them connected with me on Peanut, it was fab. We made a beeline for each other at the next class and even went for a coffee together afterwards. Because of the app, it meant there was a friendly face in the room, which I have to say was just really lovely. You can download the app for free today. Head to peanut.app.link/finallypregnant or search for Peanut in your app store. And when you do, make sure you head over to the Finally Pregnant group. Hello, hello. How are you doing? I appreciate that's not necessarily the best question to ask right now, is it? In the UK, we're in lockdown again and it sucks. There's no doubt. I hope that you have all the support you need, even though I know you probably wish there was more because you deserve more. And it's just shit, isn't it? Quite frankly. But I want to give you some good news, if that's okay, about the podcast. And I'm hoping it's going to cheer you up a little and give you something positive to do, if that's all right. The Finally Pregnant podcast has only been nominated in the best podcast category for the Glow Mama Awards. What? I know. It's exciting, isn't it? As well as the huge nod to the hard work I really have and continue to put into creating this podcast over the last almost 2 years, it gives a huge shout out to my fabulous guests who take the time to share their stories with us all. And it's also pretty huge that a podcast talking about pregnancy and parenting after infertility and loss has been recognised within a quote unquote normal Mummy Awards. That can only help to raise awareness of all that we are going through. So huge, huge thanks to those who nominated it. It's just, honestly, I'm so, so grateful. So what can you do? Please, please, please go and vote as soon as possible if you haven't already. And also, please, please share. There is a post on my Instagram that I'm going to share between now and the 16th of January because it has to be done by the 16th of January. So please go and find that and please share it. I would really appreciate it. As always, there is a link in the bio, but if you're holding your phone right now, and I'm sorry if you haven't, because I'm just going to go through this right now, open a browser, type in GLOW, which is G-L-O, MAMA, which is M-A-M-A, awards, press vote, pop your email in, head to the best podcast, pick the Finally Pregnant podcast and submit. Done. All while you're listening to the actual podcast. Love it. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And if you haven't got your phone in your hand right now, then please do jump on somewhere and do it soon. Thank you. Right. Going back to the impact of COVID and lockdown, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Gosh, where do we stop? We were talking in our Hangout support group recently about how much has been taken away from those who are pregnant and have newborns just now. And I can confirm, unfortunately, that even with an 18-month-old, I am feeling it too. All those experiences that we had hoped and planned for, even if we were scared to admit it, they've been taken away. And I want to say now that you are so within your rights to feel pissed off about that, quite frankly. It isn't fair, and you are likely to be experiencing grief around all of those lost experiences. And I'm so, so sorry for that. I wish I could give each and every one of you a hug and take that pain away. I really do. and please know that I'm always here. Actually, since I was thinking about this preamble, one of my Hangout members has actually written a list within the Hangout of all the things that she has been through, got through over the last year or so, with getting pregnant, with her pregnancy, with having a little one, and now going into lockdown again, and all, like, lots more that's happened to her, bless her. It has been so much, and she is still standing, which is just incredible. You know who you are if you're listening. And what she did was, in a post in the Hangout, she listed all of that stuff, and it was so eloquently put, it really was. But also, it was just such a good reminder for her to realize that if she's struggling, and this goes out to anyone, like, write down what you're going through, write down what you are missing perhaps as well. And when you're struggling, go back and read over that list and realize how far you've come, how much you've got through, and just how strong you are. And that it's okay, list or no list, it's okay to be upset, to shed a tear, to just break down sometimes and have a meltdown. It's okay, because there is a lot right now. So, so, so much. So I could go on, but I'm just sending out huge, huge hugs to each and every one of you. On to today's episode, which is the reason that I can't go on, because we need to crack on to the actual episode. This one was inspired by the beautiful Chloe and the gorgeous George, who are both little preemies. It's talking to their mums in the Hangout, actually, that I have learned so much about something I fortunately, from myself, have not had the experience of. But as I've always advocated, it's so important to hear things you might not have been touched by, because none of us know what might be around the corner. And in educating ourselves, we can help to support others better if they have been through these things. Plus, if you are a parent of a premature baby, I hope that the conversation today helps you realize that you are not on your own. For this conversation, I'm chatting to an inspirational woman who I am really proud now to call a friend. Sheikah has the most phenomenal Insta account, My Little Food Critic, again, link in bio, where she shares hundreds of baby weaning and toddler meals. As it becomes apparent through our conversation, the account in some ways has been a response to her little one being born prematurely at 32 weeks, but I'll let our chat explain that. If you have experience of having a premature baby, I want to tell you about a couple of places you can find support. Firstly, as we talk about in today's episode, Ickle Pickles is a fabulous charity raising money to provide life-saving equipment for neonatal intensive care units in the UK. And I've also recently found an Insta account called Miracle Moon UK, which is run by two NICU mums, and they have a podcast of the same name, so do go and check that out. For now, though, I'll hand over to my chat with Sheikah. Warning, we both got pretty teary, so you may want to have a tissue handy. Thank you so much and take care. And a little PS, please remember to go and vote. Thank you. Bye-bye. Hi there, Sheikah. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm really well, thank you. And I'm really looking forward to chatting to you today, because this is a topic that I, as I said to you before, I really don't know a lot about. People I know have had premature babies, and I know from reading things on Instagram and chatting to people, like, just how significant it is. And I've even seen posts where people say, like, how to support someone who has got a premature baby, that kind of thing, which is amazing. And it makes me think about the fertility community, and that there's a whole world going on there that people don't necessarily recognize. And when we started talking and you told me that your son had been premature, I just was really keen to chat to you so that you could share your story with us, because part of this podcast is about helping people to realize that they're not on their own, and also to understand different people's experiences as well. So I'm so grateful that you're here. It would be amazing. I know who you are and how wonderful you are. It would be so amazing if you could tell people a bit about who you are and what you do to start us off.
Perfect. So my name's Shika and I run an Instagram account called My Little Food Critic, which I actually started when I began weaning my little boy. And I share lots of really easy, healthy recipes for the whole family, for children. Like, it's all about flavour, quick, easy. So that's kind of a bit about me. I was a teacher before I got pregnant with my little boy, and I actually left work probably about 6 months before we conceived, because we just wanted to focus on conceiving and kind of take away any stress that was around us. So that's my story. So then I was a stay-at-home mum, and then started this Instagram, and that's kind of where we're at now.
And going back to the trying to conceive, it did take you a little longer than you had anticipated, didn't it? That's perhaps why you took the time away.
It took us about 18 months to conceive, and we kind of went down a natural route first. So we used acupuncture and herbal medicines, and ultimately we did conceive that way. So yeah, we didn't have like a straightforward journey to parenthood. It took us quite a while to get there. And actually, like, prematurity was something I never even thought about. Like, I have to say, all the worries about getting pregnant and, I'm going to say, maybe staying pregnant, all of those things I thought about, but I never really thought past him being born. I think it's kind of everything you see is you have a baby, they're born full term, you bring them home, and you start that journey of being with your baby. So it was something I never imagined, actually. And even when I knew he was going to be premature, I still didn't really think past him being born. I think I was so focused on getting him here successfully that I didn't really think about what it would be like to have an actual premature baby.
And so you mentioned there that you knew that he was going to be premature. So this wasn't a sudden thing. Well, I guess tell us how sudden it was. How had your pregnancy been? Had it been a healthy pregnancy? Had it been high risk?
So I had a really easy pregnancy. Actually, I didn't really have any, like, you know, I wasn't particularly sick, I wasn't particularly tired, very easy first 12 weeks, super, super easy. Actually, I probably felt the best I ever felt. Everything was great. We had chosen to go under the care of an obstetrician, just that was kind of our personal choice to do that. And everything was really great. We did have extra scans that you wouldn't necessarily have otherwise. And it was actually at a scan just after 20 weeks, so probably about 21 and a half weeks, where everything had been great up until that point. Like, baby was growing fine, I was fine, yeah, there were no issues at all. And then suddenly at that scan, our obstetrician sort of said, oh, I'm not sure everything's kind of as it should be. And then I had to go and have some extra tests. And we were told at that point that my placenta wasn't functioning as it should. So we knew immediately then that he was going to be premature. And I remember her actually saying, so we're going to give you some steroid injections in case your baby comes in the next week or two, or, you know, the next few weeks. But I'm really hopeful that we'll get past 30 weeks. And when I sort of look back on it, I almost can't remember how I felt. I think I was just in so much shock that I just couldn't. It was almost like I couldn't understand what she was saying to me, that your baby is going to be premature. So it was a shock. It was a real shock, because everything had been fine. What triggered it was that extra scan is I had an anterior placenta. So I was told that I wouldn't feel movement as much as if your placenta was at the back. But being my first pregnancy, I had nothing to compare it to. So I remember her saying to me that, you know, you won't feel as much movement, but you will feel some. But I didn't really know what I was feeling, and I wasn't feeling anything. And that was kind of what triggered that scan that we had. And then they realised there was a problem. So from that point, from around 21 and a half weeks, I saw the obstetrician at least twice a week. I saw midwives, you know, on top of that. It was like constant monitoring to make sure that he was okay. And then for the final 2 weeks of my pregnancy, I was in the hospital, just like on complete bed rest, constant monitoring. And then he was born at just kind of a day over 32 weeks.
Gosh, so that was from 21 and a half weeks to 32. I can only imagine it must have been just like holding your breath the whole time.
Yeah. the way you've put that, it's exactly that, holding my breath the whole time and just hoping that he would make it. And I think I was so focused on it, I didn't really, I'm going to say, research or look into what it meant to have a premature baby. All I could think about was, what can I do to keep him inside me for longer and give him everything that he needs? You know, I was so focused on that and just trying to do whatever I could so kind of to support that. And it was hard because I think nobody wants to be told their baby's, you know, coming early. It's so scary. I think even just being a first-time mum and being pregnant is scary, isn't it? It's unlike sort of anything you've ever been through. And I found being in the hospital really hard because obviously you do see sad outcomes when you're there, and you get to know some of the other mums that are there long term too, you know, like I was there for a few weeks, and it was really hard. It was, like, without doubt, kind of the worst, you know, few weeks of my life, kind of just waiting. I had to have steroid shots twice, actually, when they thought there was another time he was about to come, and that's to help their lungs, so they give you those shots so they kind of have a better chance at breathing when they're born. And yeah, it was just really hard. It's really lonely as well when you're in this hospital, you know, by yourself most of the time. And obviously my parents would visit and family and friends, but the majority of the time it was just me in a room, you know, like waiting for someone to come and say, oh, like, things are okay today. And that, you know, that's another day that we've got past. And I think I understood then as well, the every single day makes a huge difference to their, like, the baby's positive outcome. So even sort of 3 or 4 days can have a drastic, like, impact on their, like, chances of survival. So we were just like, really, like, we just want to get past 32 weeks. And actually we were really lucky, I think, that we got to 32.
Amazing. And we are talking about, so your son is just turned four.
He just turned four.
And so this is pre-COVID. So the people, anyone going through this right now, unfortunately, doesn't necessarily have, I don't want to call it a luxury, because it was no luxury for you even at that point, but of having people coming to visit. Hopefully at this stage now where we are within the pandemic, that you will have your birth partner with you, or someone is going to be able to come in and visit. But for a long time, people weren't. And I know that there are a couple of members of my hangout who have had premature babies over the last year and have had to spend a lot of time on their own in hospitals, which has been really, really difficult. So you managed to get to 32 weeks. What are they telling you at that point? You know, is he, how was he born? Was he born, was it a vaginal birth or an abdominal birth, if you don't mind me asking? Does he go straight to NICU? How much preparation are you given for what's going to happen next?
The hospital were fantastic. The midwives there that took care of me, I cannot thank them enough for what they did, how they took care of me, how they took care of him when he was born. They were really, really brilliant in that preparation. We were offered the opportunity to go and have a look around at the NICU, which we declined, actually. At that point, I think I was, you know, I was obviously pregnant. I was anxious. I was worried. And I just think I couldn't bear the thought of seeing babies unwell and, you know, strapped up to monitors. And it was a bit overwhelming. And we decided against it. We talked about it and we said, well, you know, it's inevitable that is where he's going to end up. So let's not upset ourselves, I guess, more by seeing how difficult that is. So we chose to decline that. But I think it's brilliant that they offer that. And it's such a personal choice as to, I think some people prefer to be so much more prepared and, you know, completely understand what that scenario is going to look like when you walk in. So they were really, really good on that. And we also had the paediatricians from the intensive care come and speak to us and explain that, you know, like, sort of immediately after he's born, this is what will happen. He may not cry. Don't panic if he doesn't. You know, so they really talked us through lots of kind of the small steps almost. And they explained that we probably wouldn't hold him. He would be taken away straight away. And my husband could then go and see him. And they said, you can make that decision what you guys want to do, and you'll be able to go and see him as soon as, you know, possible. So they were very good at preparing us, and we understood, you know, kind of what the timeline would be as soon as he was born, which really helped me, actually, because I think that even that sort of thing of hearing the first cry. It's something you see like on television, you hear about it. And actually, if I hadn't been told that, I think I would have really panicked. Like, oh my, you know, I can't hear him. Is he okay? So they were very, very good at preparing us. I was also aware that I would have a C-section. That was really clear that they wouldn't risk a vaginal birth, as my body wasn't going into labour. He was struggling to get everything that he needed. So it would be a call that they made when it was time. So I knew I'd have a C-section, which I was absolutely fine with. I just wanted it to be the safest and quickest way to, you know, get him delivered and get him to safety, really.
Oh, gosh, honestly, just hearing you talk, it just makes me feel emotional for you, like, and for anyone who has been through this or potentially in the future might go through this. And I think what you're saying about being informed is so, so important. And on that note, for anyone who hasn't come across the term NICU before, it's neonatal intensive care unit. So that's where your son was taken. And I almost don't want to ask you this question, but I'm going to. I hope you don't mind. How does it feel? It just seems like so, I feel emotional. Like I say, how does it feel not holding him straight away? What does that feel like?
I was really lucky. I actually got to hold him for about 3 seconds. Once he was delivered, they sort of brought him to me, and I didn't hold him fully, but they sort of put him on me, and it was about 3 seconds. And like, even when I think back to that now, I almost felt like I failed him in some way, that like what my body should have done to protect him, like I couldn't do it. And that's how I felt. I remember in that moment thinking like, I couldn't keep you safe. And it was really hard. It was so hard. And I just wanted my husband to go with him because I needed to know he was okay, because I can look after myself. I'll be fine. And my parents were waiting anyway for me. And that was hard. That was harder than seeing him even like in the incubator. It was that feeling of like, you should still be inside me and you shouldn't be like, you shouldn't be here yet. It was hard.
Honestly, we're both here like crying. I actually think this is the first time that's happened in this podcast. I don't like, and I talk about some emotional stuff. Oh gosh, wow. Thank you so much for sharing this, because I know there are going to be people listening who have been through this. So how do you get past that? Like, your body hasn't failed you. Your body hasn't failed him. Like, and I can say that because I know that feeling from my trying to conceive journey. I know that feeling from losses that I've had. You know, this is not something that we can change or affect, or, you know, we haven't done this on purpose. It's, you know, there are obviously medical explanations, but we take on so much of that guilt and responsibility ourselves when actually we don't necessarily, and in most cases, have any control over it. And so we really need to try to rid ourselves of that feeling of failure. And can I ask, and this, we might be jumping ahead when I ask this question, you know, like, how did you process that bit in particular immediately, you know, once he was here, in the years that have gone on since? How did you process that?
In that immediate sort of aftermath of him being born, I didn't actually get to see him straight away because there was an emergency in the intensive care unit, and usually they'll wheel you straight down once your baby's there, but they couldn't because there was an emergency. So it was actually, God, probably about 3 hours before I saw him. Those 3 hours were so hard because my husband was kind of coming back and forth between, you know, between the NICU and where I was, and sending me pictures. And I'm like so grateful for basic things like technology that I could, even, you know, he could send me a photo of him and I could see him. And I found it really hard. At that point, I remember thinking to myself that I can't worry about what's happened now, because it's happened and he is here. And I can only focus now on what I can do to get him strong enough to bring him home. And I was really, really determined to give him my breast milk. And that was one of the things the paediatricians had said, that with premature babies, if you can, it's really important because they get a lot of your immunity and, you know, all the goodness that comes with breast milk. And they really encourage it. And if you can't, then they encourage you actually to use donor milk. So they really do encourage that. And I I almost became, in those weeks after he was born, like a little bit obsessed with making sure I had enough milk for him. And it's a really strange thing, pumping or hand expressing, as I had to do for the first couple of days, when you're not with your baby. And, you know, everything you read says that actually it's being with your baby that produces the milk. So I found that really hard, but I became really focused on that. And that kind of became my focus to, like, provide him with enough milk. And I think that got me through, actually, having that positive thing to focus on. And I felt, actually, well, I'm doing something to help you and to support you. And it actually is something only I can do for you. And I think that gave me some kind of solace, actually, that I was doing this thing for him. And yeah, I just pretty much spent every waking minute just, you know, by his side. But it was really hard. It's a really lonely place, because you have people checking in, friends and family, and people checking in and asking how he is and how I am. And it's quite hard, because I felt that every time I would speak to somebody, all those feelings would come back almost, of, yeah, this is, you know, this is what happened, and he's doing okay now. We were very lucky. I mean, he did very well in the NICU. He did very well. And I found that really hard, just trying to not, I guess, keep retelling that story in that time, because it was so painful to just think about everything that had happened. But, you know, we had a really amazing support network of friends and family that, you know, were really there for us. Over the years, when I look at him, I now look at him and I just think, you're so amazing. And I think he's such a fighter. Like, when I see, you know, he learns something new or he does something, and I think, you fought to be here, that you're so strong. And that gives me so much comfort that I think it's made him who he is, in a way, that he's such a strong boy. He's so strong willed. He is, you know, he's just brilliant. And I'm so grateful that I get to watch him grow up, and that we've been through this amazing journey that, in a way, I think has, like, brought us even closer together. Because I just want to, like any parent, I just want to soak up every moment of him. And I'm just so grateful. I'm so grateful to him for having that strength to fight and, you know, to be here.
Oh, he got it from his mama, that's for sure. And I wonder whether, like, I know, just thinking about what you do now with your work, and it is about the weaning and the feeding and everything. And I wonder whether, I think when we've spoken before, you really enjoyed cooking and everything previously anyway, but that is actually part of a continuation of that nourishment and nurturing that started when that he was in the NICU. I wonder whether that's the case.
I absolutely think that it is. When it came to time to wean him, exactly what you've said, I was like, right, I need to provide him with the absolute, like, best foundation that I can. And I always loved cooking. So I thought, okay, I'm really going to go for this. And I wanted, I guess, to get as much nourishment into every meal that I could. And I was so keen to do that. And I wanted him to eat the food that we ate, you know, the different flavors that we enjoy. And so I started cooking his meals, and I was sharing stuff with friends and family, and they kind of all encouraged me to start this Instagram page and pop my recipes up on there. And it definitely was. I think it all stemmed from that feeling of wanting to do anything that was in my power just to really give him, like every single parent wants to give their children that best start, don't they? And I thought, well, actually, I really enjoy cooking. It's something that I can use to help him get that great start. So that's where it all stemmed from. So he's my inspiration behind my little food critic.
Oh, and he's so lovely when I see him in videos and everything. Like, he loves it. You did one the other day and he was smelling parsnips and he was so into it. Like, that is a gift that you have given him, for sure, because he was smelling it and he was tasting it. And it's just amazing. I love it. I love it. I want to do very similar with Ren. I know that I won't, because food just isn't my bag, but I am taking inspiration from you and doing what I can. But we go back then, if you wouldn't mind, to how long was he in the NICU, and if you could explain something to me. So like I said, this is all fairly new to me, but when people are talking about having had, or, you know, kind of their little ones growing up having been born premature, they talk about age correction. And so if you could talk to me a bit about that, I'd really appreciate it.
Perfect. So yeah, that's something I didn't really know about, actually. So when they are, so for example, my son was born at 32 weeks. So things like, so he was 2 months early. So when he was, I'm going to say 10 months old, his actual age, we would refer to his actual age as 10 months, his corrected age as 8 months. So for that first, usually it's around the first year, maybe slightly more, especially like sort of when you see your doctor and things, they will ask what their corrected age is, because they may be behind in some of their milestones. More so, not behind, just they will sort of do them at their corrected age, not their actual age. So actual age is their, what they really are, and corrected is what they should have been, you know, about when he should have been due. So we were there for just over 7 weeks.
Gosh, yeah, that is a long time. And were you in the hospital the whole time, or were you coming home, or how did that work?
So you're not allowed to stay with them. However, you can be there. Parents are allowed 24 hours a day. So the system that kind of worked for us was I would get there quite early in the morning, around 6 a.m. and I would stay pretty much until 8, 9 o'clock in the evening. We're very lucky. Obviously, he was our first, so I could do that because I didn't have anything else. You know, I didn't have another child to look after or anything. So I was there nearly all day. You are allowed visitors. So my parents also used to come during the day and they'd like bring my lunch. And there was a really lovely like parent and family room. And then my husband did have to go back to work. He wasn't off for the whole 7 weeks. And then he would come in the evening and we'd have some time together with him. And yeah, so you're allowed 24 hours a day, but there's no bed. You know, you've just got a chair that you have next to your baby's cot. So I tried to spend as much time as I could with him. And they really encourage you, the nurses, to do the skin-to-skin contact with your baby. So, or kangaroo care, it's also called. So it's where your baby is sort of like naked in their nappy, and then you put them directly onto your skin. And that really helps them to like with their breathing. And there's so many studies into it that it does help premature babies to get better a lot quicker. So they encourage that. And I would try and do that as much as I could. So he'd pretty much be on me if I wasn't pumping for him. And yeah, he just, that was kind of how our days went really for those 7 weeks.
Yeah, just getting to know each other. It must be so hard. Like, that period is difficult anyway, you know, like you're sleep deprived. And I think it was really wise of you to kind of go home and get your sleep rather than sleeping on the chair, so that you could be in your best state for him. Because this, and I'm sure that you went home and it wasn't like you just went to sleep. I'm sure that he was constantly on your mind and you waking up throughout the night wondering how he was doing. So, you know, the sleep deprivation is a lot. But you were given that opportunity to get to know him more, but obviously not at home and not with your husband there a bit more. So what was it like when you did finally get to take him home? That must have been such a special, but also I'm sure, like for everyone, a bit of a frightening day as well.
So in the NICU, they move through stages. So there's like the first room where the really poorly babies are, and most babies that are premature go there first. And then it's kind of like then they move into sort of a middle room, and there's a final room. So once they're in that final room, you know you're close to taking them home, and you get to room in with them, which I think is really good what they do in the hospitals, which is you're given a room where both parents can stay. And your baby comes into that room with you. And it's the first time that you're alone, really, you know, without other babies in the room. And so we had him in that room. And that was the first time that I obviously was with him for like a 24-hour period. And I remember being really nervous because everything's really scheduled in the NICU. So, you know, the babies are checked on every, well, less, you know, constantly. They're hooked up to monitors, the nurses are in and out, and if you're not sure of anything, there's always a professional to say, is this okay, or, you know, do I need to do something differently? And he was still being fed with a tube up until that point. So he would feed from the breast for some feeds, but he would still get some of his milk through his tube. So when we went into that room, he was completely off the tube. And I think that was the first time I realised that almost like how hard it is, because he was then waking up quite a lot in the night because he wanted milk. And I remember just being really nervous. I was like, I'm fully responsible for you now. Like I don't have a doctor or a nurse to say, is this okay? Am I doing the right thing? And by that point, he still was just under 5 pounds. So he was still really tiny, you know, like absolutely tiny. And I remember being really nervous that first night, and I couldn't sleep. Even when he slept, I would just keep waking up and just checking he was breathing, because I was so used to having a monitor that would tell me he was breathing okay. I found that quite, it was sort of quite funny in a way. We'd say, oh, we can't sleep, but we need to check he's still breathing. It was lovely. The day we got to bring him home was one of the best days of my life. I just couldn't wait to bring him home. And as you said, that kind of time you have with your partner, you and, you know, a new baby, it's a really special time. And you do miss out on that when obviously you've gone through this NICU experience with a premature or a poorly baby. And it was just lovely. It was so lovely when we got to bring him home, and just for us to all be together in our environment. It was really lovely. But we've probably slept less than we'd ever slept, even when I was waking up to pump when he was in the hospital. Because we just wanted to check that he was breathing. It was like, is he still breathing? Is he still okay? So, we kind of took it in turns to stay awake so that we could monitor him. But it was lovely. It was just so lovely to have him there and just do do your normal things, I guess, in your home with your baby. I really appreciated every single thing that, you know, I got to do that with him. And yeah, it was lovely. And he was so tiny, so it was like having a tiny newborn as well, which was nice.
How did you both manage with like changing someone so tiny? Because that was one of the things that I always worried about. And you just do it, I suppose, don't you? But it's much easier when they get bigger and a bit more robust. But someone so tiny, like Ren was 8'5" when she was born. So, you know, she was sizable but still fragile and frail as far as I was concerned. So 5 pounds must just be, oh, you're just doing it with your fingertips, surely.
So he was 3 pounds when he was born, and it was probably the second. So we couldn't pick him up in the NICU until the day after he was born. And the nurses were fab, and they said, would you like to change his nappy? And I was a bit like, how? He was about that big. I was like, how do I change his? I was really nervous, and they were brilliant. They showed me, and I think I was scared of hurting him, actually, because he was so small. I thought, like, what if I hurt you? And they were brilliant, and they sort of helped me the first time I changed his nappy. And yeah, I was always a bit nervous, but I got used to it very quickly, like all the wires, and I'm going to say handling him, taking him in and out of his incubator. I got used to it really, really quickly. And the first time he wore clothes, he was probably about 2 weeks old. We had some tiny baby clothes that were massive on him. He was drowning in these tiny baby clothes. And I remember being really nervous to put his baby grow on, because it's like, gosh, I'm going to have to move his head. And, you know, all sorts of things that I usually would just pick him up and put him onto my chest. It was quite nerve wracking. But we got used to it really, really quickly. And then by the time he came home and he was about 5 pounds, he almost felt quite big to us compared to what he had been. And I also realised then how robust premature babies are. I think because they have to fight just to be alive, they're so strong. It was nice. And it was nice when he finally fit into those tiny baby clothes. And, you know, he wasn't drowning in them. It was really lovely.
Oh, bless him. Honestly, they're just, oh, they're so cute when they're little, aren't they? Anyway, just generally, it just makes me think back. Oh, wow. And there, I think I'm right in saying that there haven't been, fortunately, any complications, because sometimes there can be complications. And one of the things, I guess, is the lungs or the like overall organ development for the little ones if they are premature. But with your little one, all is well.
Absolutely. We, you know, very lucky that we haven't had any complications with him. I remember this is another thing that they did prepare us for. The paediatricians did talk about, you know, with premature babies, there's always a risk of developmental delays, and, you know, sometimes they can have other problems, you know, like, as you said, it might be breathing problems or heart problems or eyesight problems. You know, there's a whole range of things that they can have, hearing difficulties. We were very lucky that we didn't have any difficulties with him. But I do know of other parents who we met in the NICU that have had things like vision, you know, some vision impairment with their children. And it's really worrying, because I think as a parent anyway, you're kind of always waiting for those milestones of them, like sitting up, crawl, you know, there's so many things that you're constantly kind of waiting for them to achieve. And with premature babies, sometimes those milestones will happen at their corrected age, not their actual age. They may actually be a few months behind. And I remember my son didn't start walking until he was 17 months old, which, so that was 17 months actual. And I remember for quite a while, I was like really worried. I was thinking, like, everybody I know, their babies have been walking, you know, for months now, and he was still just about pulling himself up. And there were obviously times when you worry and you think, is it linked to the prematurity? Like, have I missed something, you know, that he's not doing? But no, we were very lucky that he has done okay. And unfortunately, it, you know, it isn't the case for all babies, so it's very difficult. But the support there is great, and the paediatricians do like follow-up checks to make sure that they are meeting their milestones and developing as they should. So there's a lot of really good aftercare.
Gosh, it makes me think. So I remember going to a sensory class with Ren. It's not one that we continued with, not because of this at all, but it was just the first time we went, we booked on to 4 weeks. She was about 2 months old, and there's a picture of her with two of the NCT boys either side. And even looking at that picture now, you know, you look forward to these classes, don't you, so much, and you think how amazing they're going to be. And I've had like amazing experiences as well. But that very first couple, like I was looking at Ren thinking, are you okay? Are you doing the same? Like, none of them were doing anything, is the truth. Barely opening their eyes, you know, crying here and there. But that comparison for me during that class, it actually, personally, it put me off classes for a little while, because I was so worried. And obviously, you know, we had taken a long time to have Ren, and I'd had a lot of time to consider all of the negative outcomes and that kind of thing. But I just, to have that added layer of the different, you know, is the development happening at their actual age or their corrected age, on top of that, that must be a huge amount of, I don't want to say pressure because it's not on you, but of worry, I guess, and concern. And yeah, my heart goes out to you for that, because I know how I felt. And Ren was born, you know, on her due date, and there weren't any concerns. So, and I, yeah, it just, yes, I my heart goes out to you with that concern, because that must have been quite significant. However, what I will say is Ren, as you know, is 18 months old, was born pretty much, well, 5 days after, no, she was born 2 days before her due date, and she's over 18 months now and only just walking, barely. So it just goes to show how different they all are. However, many times you hear that, though, it doesn't change it, does it? You worry, I worried, you know, you just can't help it. That's what we do as parents, isn't it?
That's what's so hard that we do as parents. And I feel like there's almost so much pressure from society as well about kind of things like, are they doing this yet? Are they sleeping through that? You know, there's always, I feel that there's always quite a lot of pressure, and it can get you down. As you said, that sometimes things that should be a positive experience actually turn into quite a stressful experience, because you're then worried if your baby is okay, almost, aren't you? Like, you know, are they developing like they should? I always remember one of the, well, always people, I mean, he was on the second centile, or he was off his growth chart for quite a while. Eventually he got onto the second centile, and I was so happy because I could finally plot him, see where he was growing. And for a long time, probably until he was about 6 to 8 months old, pretty much anybody new that we met, like at a class, at anywhere, the first question always is, oh, how old's your baby? It's just that first question, isn't it? And I would say, oh, he's 5 months or 6 months, however old he was. And people would always say, oh, he's so small, isn't he? And I used to find that really upsetting because for me, I was like, he's doing so great. You know, he was doing so well and he was growing really well. And I used to find that really hard. And in the beginning, I would kind of go into something of explaining, oh, you know, well, he was born premature and he was born 8 weeks earlier. I would start to almost kind of, I felt like I was almost kind of trying to say, well, it's okay, he's small. And then I let go of that really quickly. And I would just say, well, you know, they all come in different shapes and sizes and he's doing great. So I used to find that really hard when people said, you know, he was quite small. And even sort of after, when he was, I would say, sort of 18, 19 months, he was normal, but compared to some of his peers, he was a bit smaller. And that's one thing I've always struggled with when people did say to me, oh, he's so small. I found that hard. And now, I mean, you have no idea that he was premature now, you know, that you cannot tell at all. He is, you know, completely the same as his peers. And they're all different, aren't they? Some children are naturally taller, naturally more petite. There's so many variables. But I think it does add pressure to when, and I know people don't say it to, you know, people, and there's nothing behind it. It's just one of those things, isn't it, that you sort of ask about babies. But yeah, I used to find that quite difficult sometimes.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And you're right, it is a kind of standard question, isn't it? How old are they? And then, well, then people don't actually have to comment on their size, do they? Let's face it. But because of the age, people, especially, I guess, if you're in a room with babies of a similar age, then that there is that obvious comparison. But like with everything that I talk about generally around trying to conceive and loss and so on and so forth, you know, we don't necessarily need to offer our opinions on everything. And that's something we all need to learn. I'm the same, you know, and sometimes it is about filling a space, isn't it? And having something to say, like you say, people don't mean anything by it and certainly don't mean anything negative by it, but it can be the thing that we can be very, very sensitive about. So on that note, understandably though, by the way, just yes, on that note, what can we do? So if I knew someone who is finding out that they're going to have a premature baby, has just had a premature baby and is in hospital, has just come home after having had a premature baby, like with the little one, what can I do to support them? What are the best things for them?
I think it's if they haven't yet had their baby, but they know they are going to have a premature baby, I think just, I know it's an easy thing to say, being there for somebody, but I think just checking in on them, but not necessarily kind of asking how everything is, because usually in that situation you don't know when it will happen. You know, it's quite a sudden thing that you are, like, we were told a few hours before he was born that he was going to be born now, so, you know, they would prep you for surgery, etc. So I think just being there and just letting them know that you are there if they want to talk about how they're feeling. I remember a really good friend of mine, when I was in the hospital, she just bought me these magazines. It was such a kind gesture because it was something for me just to take my mind off that, you know, constant worry. And I think just being there, and if obviously with the current situation, you can't necessarily see people face to face. So I know that adds a whole new barrier to things. But if you can, and, you know, it's safe and et cetera, to just go and see somebody and just do something normal, I guess, that, you know, have a coffee or do something normal with them. When you're actually in the hospital, the thing that I found the most useful was just people doing things to make it that bit easier when we were home. Like I said, we were really lucky. We had, you know, some really kind friends and family who would just like drop our dinner off. And it's something you don't really think about. But when you've been at the hospital for, I don't know, 12 hours, eating is so low on your agenda. You know, you're doing all these other things, and just small gestures like that, you know, really went a long way. Or just even a text to say, I'm just checking in, I'm thinking of you. You don't need to respond. Let me know if you want to talk. That was one of the things that I found that I didn't always want to talk, but I just knowing that somebody was thinking about us and we were in their thoughts really meant a lot. And in terms of when you actually come home, this is going to sound really silly what I'm going to say, but I babies that are born premature have really low immunity compared to a baby that's born full term. And we were told that you need to be extra careful and kind of follow what you do at NICU, which is when you come in, you have to wash your hands, you have to anti-bac before you touch your baby. That's just to kind of stop infection. And one of the things I really, really kind of meant a lot to us when people said, I'd love to come and see you, but actually I've not been feeling 100%. I don't want to pass anything on to your baby. It sounds a bit silly, but it's a real worry that your baby will get poorly and end up back in the NICU, which happened to a really good friend of mine, actually. Her little boy got really poorly quite quickly after coming home. And it's kind of one of the things you worry about is them ending up back there. And yeah, just friends and family, I guess just being normal with you when you come back and not necessarily, I guess, I don't know the right word, actually. I don't know what word I'm trying to think of, but I think just being normal and just, you know, understanding maybe if you're not ready for people to hold the baby, sometimes it can be quite worrying. You just worry, I think, more because, you know, they're so tiny and you've been through this really traumatic experience. But yeah, just being normal, coming over, you know, if it's appropriate to do so, and just knowing that people are thinking of you and kind of supporting you is a big thing. And food was one of the biggest things. If somebody brought sort of dinner over, it was a lifesaver. You know, I think for any new mum, that's, you know, always much anticipated and kind of, you know, oh, you bought dinner, that's brilliant. So I would say just be there for them, but don't necessarily. Sometimes I found when people asked if he was okay, I found that quite hard because I didn't always know the answer to that. So he's okay now, but things change so quickly in the NICU. So I used to find that quite difficult. Or if he'd had a bad day or something had happened, having a message where somebody said, oh, is he okay? You know, are you guys okay? Could almost be quite triggering because you think, oh my God, what if he's not okay? What if, you know, this issue that we're having gets worse and something happens to him? So
it is about being there, isn't it? And them letting you know that they're there and not expecting anything from you. I guess that's kind of the main thing, isn't it? And food, 100% food. One of my best presents from someone that I met through Instagram, actually, the lovely Ali. And she sent me a box of Cook Meals, you know, Cook Kitchen. Oh my gosh. Like, I lived on them. They were meals for one. Once Bob went back to work, they were my lunch every day, pretty much. And yeah, that food is the best thing, isn't it? It really is. So, and I can imagine, as you say, you've been at the hospital all day, you get home, you know, the food at the hospital, you're talking kind of Costa, maybe a Marks and Spencer's if you're lucky, but it's not going to be the most healthy, nutritious, warming, wholesome, you know, homemade food. So for people to leave food, that must be a real, well, I don't even want to say treat. It's just a necessity, isn't it? But just really kind. So thank you so much for that. And with regards to kind of more professional support, there is a wonderful charity called Ickle Pickle, isn't there, that you have worked with recently, actually. Could you tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, absolutely. So I met Rachel, who runs Ickle Pickles, through Instagram, actually. And I was really keen to want to use my platform to support something that, you know, something that's close to my heart that I've been through. So I was so thrilled when I met her and we got talking, and I wanted to find a way to support them. So I've done a few bits with them, and we did a cook along recently to try and raise some funds for them. And they are an absolutely brilliant charity. They buy life-saving equipment. When I say life-saving, it literally is the equipment that keeps babies alive. And a lot of the neonatal units, which I didn't know, actually don't have enough funds for all the equipment they need. So a lot of them are struggling for the equipment they need for the babies, and they raise funds and then they buy the equipment that the neonatal units need. And it's not just for premature babies, it's for sick babies that are, you know, maybe born full term but have some problems. And the work they do is really brilliant. And I'm so glad that I'm, you know, able to support them and try and help to raise some awareness for them, because without that equipment, you know, my son wouldn't be here today. So I am really, really pleased that I met them through Instagram.
Wonderful. And then from your emotional support point of view, you said that you kind of got to know a few of the other mums in the hospital at the time. Is there any other support out there for mums or dads of premature babies?
I think having that support network, if you're lucky enough to meet other mums that you kind of connect with, and it's quite hard to do that actually, because you're also, even though you're in a room with say six other babies, everyone's so focused on their own babies, and you don't really, you know, you don't necessarily get a huge amount of time to talk to other mums. It's sometimes just in the parent room, or in the pumping room actually is where we used to have a lot of our chats. And it was really nice having that support network, because especially after he came home, because the things they were doing were different to other babies of the same age, it was nice to have to be able to talk to somebody and say, oh, this happened, you know, last night. You know, how was your night? Were things normal? Honestly, I don't know what other support is out there. I think charities perhaps can connect you with local mums in the area, but I never found anything local to me for prematurity support, or, you know, like a support group where mums had been through the same thing. And I actually wish I'd been on Instagram then, because the support on Instagram is phenomenal. There are so many wonderful pages, you know, that supporting mums and dads that have gone through premature births. And I think actually, if I had been on Instagram then, that's what I would have turned to, you know, and you can make great connections through there.
I totally agree. Absolutely. And what I will do is I will, when I post on Instagram, and perhaps in my intro to this episode, in this conversation, I'll mention a couple of the ones that I have come across as well. Because, yeah, you want to have people to talk to, as that's a huge part of it, as with all of this. So thank you so much for talking to me, because I know that people listening to this will have got so much from it. They really will, like information, but also that knowledge that they're not on their own, that, you know, you have got through this, and there'll be some similarities and some differences, or preparing people if this is, you know, what they know might happen in the near future. So thank you so much for sharing. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
All right then, Shika, take care. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.